Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. These three pop up occasionally in the New Testament, all around St. Paul, sometimes with him, sometimes without him. And, you know, you find these characters in the New Testament, you think to yourself, I wonder why they're mentioned, because there are so many that go unmentioned and unnamed. But these not only are named, but we actually know something about these New Testament saints, Aquila, Priscilla, Apollos. I know you can pronounce the first name Aquila, but I think just for the sake of alliteration, we'll stick with mine. Dr. Peter Scarrett joins us as the church remembers on this Friday, February the 13th, these three New Testament saints. Dr. Scare is Assistant Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Peter, welcome back.
Great to be with you, Todd.
They're known not entirely for their association with St. Paul, but mostly for it. How important are these three, Aquila, Priscilla, and Apollos, to Paul's overall ministry?
Well, let me say that one of these three is not like the other. And the first two, Priscilla and Aquila, are very positive characters. And they're wonderful for St. Paul. Priscilla and Aquila, it's interesting, they were originally Christians in Rome. And the Emperor Claudius, I think the year 49, kicked out all of the Christians in Rome. They kicked out the Jews in Rome, I guess that's the point, among them Priscilla and Aquila. And they ended up meeting Paul, I guess it was in Corinth. And they were great helpers to Paul in Corinth, because when Paul was preaching there, this was a couple, and notice that woman is always named first, not always, except I think in one case, it's the woman, Priscilla, who's named first. I think she was like the real, the drive behind this marriage, and also she might have been a woman of some means, quite a noble woman. But when they meet Paul in Corinth, they provide a livelihood for Paul. They allow him to be part of their tent-making business. And my guess, it wasn't just like these aren't just, people who are doing a seamstress work, whatever it is. They're running a pretty big business, my guess. And Paul becomes part of their business and then uses that as a base of operations. And they follow him. Then we meet them in Ephesus. And we find these are very knowledgeable people. We would call them lay people. I just call them Christians, who throughout Paul's ministry are supportive of Paul. And we find them in the various cities where Paul goes to. It's really fascinating. Apollos is a little bit different. Apollos is, I think, he's an early preacher of the gospel. And but the thing is, he's a person I think is a great example, my guess is, of a charismatic preacher. He's very knowledgeable. He knows a lot. But his theology is half-baked or underdeveloped. And I guess it's in the city of Ephesus that Apollos ends up meeting Priscilla and Aquila, and they have this kind of wonderful, Luke tells about it, it's a wonderful story about how it is they meet and what then happens.
Tell us the story. I mean, how is it that through the help and correction, gentle correction of these two lay people, Apollos kind of gets back on the theological track?
Well, again, I think Apollos is a great example of, like today, not to stereotype, but an example of, let's say, a Baptist preacher who has many talents, is great in the pulpit, but really doesn't have the education. Apollos, he's from Alexandria, and that would have been a great center of learning. He probably learned his theology with a mixture of Hellenized Christianity Hellenized Judaism, like Greek Judaism. He came to know and love Jesus Christ, and he proclaimed him boldly from the Old Testament. But Luke is a diplomat, but he also lets you know his feelings about Apollos, because he writes of Apollos. Now, Apollos, my guess is, again, is a dynamic preacher. He brings great crowds to himself. He's the kind of guy, like a Billy Graham, who could fill a stadium, because he would say, wow, there's a great preacher. But when Priscilla and Aquila hear him, they're not so impressed. And Luke says, and it's wonderful, he says, well, he preached accurately, which is a way of saying, well, he's good as far as he goes. Or it's kind of like saying, well, you look good for your age. It's not the best compliment in the world to say, especially to a charismatic person like Apollos. In fact, in Acts it says he's bubbling with fervor. And it says, I mean, he's very knowledgeable, but he's a charismatic preacher. But he doesn't know that much. He hasn't had the theology kind of, it hasn't matured. And one thing he definitely does not know, he does not know about the baptism of Jesus. He still is foggy about it. He doesn't know about Jesus' whole ministry. So he's got some misconceptions. So there's an example of a preacher. He's accurate as far as he goes. It reminds me very much of, again, think of like hearing a Billy Graham, the old crusade, where for the first 15 minutes you'd hear a sermon, you would say, well, that's kind of right as far as it goes, and then it drops off. That's kind of like Apollos. He says very true things and good things, but he needs to learn more. So what happens is Priscilla and Aquila bring him aside, and then Luke is just very, I think he's a wonderful writer. It says, they said of Apollos, he spoke accurately. And then it says Priscilla and Aquila took him aside and taught him more accurately. Now, which that's a wonderful phrase.
One thing about Apollos that you will note if you just kind of skim through the book of Acts and then later, especially in the Corinthian, I think it's the Corinthian epistles.
Right.
It appears as though Apollos is in the popular minds of perhaps the Corinthians or even those outside of Corinth, kind of on equal par or near the par of their estimation of St. Paul himself. It's, I am of Paul, I am of Apollos. Apollos seems to have his own following, so to speak.
Absolutely, and I think that's why Luke wrote the way he did, because in some sense he needed to put Apollos in his place. Because what happened is this. Paul founded the congregation in Corinth, and he gave them a solid foundation. My guess is Apollos came in afterwards, and he taught many things that were good, but in other ways, his theology was still half-baked. And I think that's why in Corinth, for instance, the problems that arise are very interesting. One of the problems that arises is the speaking in tongues. And it says in Acts that one of the things about Apollos, he was fervent or bubbling in spirit. Another problem that arises is an overemphasis on the resurrection. And my guess is Apollos learned about baptism, but it's like a kid who comes onto something and he doesn't really understand it all. He probably learned in baptism you get new life, you're resurrected life. And in Corinth, there's an overemphasis on the resurrection, so much so that they lose idea of the cross. The other thing you find in Corinth that I find fascinating is that you have this problem, strangely only there, of baptism for the dead. The way I look at it, my guess is Apollos learned about baptism but still hadn't really yet integrated it. He's like, wow, a baptism brings new life. It brings people from death to life. Why don't we also baptize the dead? So I think a lot of the problems that occurred in Corinth were, and again, Apollos is not a bad guy. He's a good guy. But he is an example, at least in my mind, of why we have to be very slow to lay hands on somebody in ordination. Or we need to take our time, because there's a man with many talents, a great speaker, very knowledgeable, but it was, again, it's like a half-baked pie. It needs more time to develop. And Apollos, my guess is, and that's why when you get to Corinth, I find it fascinating, again, Paul says, you know, we're co-workers, but I laid the foundation. Be careful now how you build on this foundation, because, you know, not everything is gold. There's bronze, there's wood, there's hay, stubble, straw. And Apollos is the kind of preacher that came in after Paul that gave him a little gold, but definitely some wood and definitely some stubble and straw. And really, he's a great picture. I think it's a great picture in our mind of a person. Again, think of your Baptist preacher down the street. You're glad he's preaching Jesus. Unfortunately, he's also got some ideas that are not so good and helpful.
Okay, with only about a minute here, Peter, let's come back to Priscilla and Aquila. Talk just briefly, if you would, at our end here, about the vital need for a well-taught, we would say well-catechized laity. How vital that is for the life of the church, and especially for the ministry of the trained and ordained pastors. About a minute.
Yeah, I say Priscilla and Aquila are the hero of this day. I mean, again, with admiration for Apollos, too, for all of his, you know, strengths and weaknesses. But without the church cannot exist without these kinds of people. They were taught by Paul. They loved Paul. They listened to him preach. They listened to him teach. They probably knew theology, and this is true, better than many of the pastors, as it was seen. They helped Paul in every way. They showed hospitality. On the last day, they can say, "You sent me a servant. You sent me a servant, Paul. Good work for taking him in. You showed him hospitality. You gave him a home. You gave him something to eat. You supported Paul, even when everybody else totally abandoned him. When everybody else said Paul was a crackpot, when everybody else said, we don't want to follow Paul, you followed him and you supported him in the ministry." And the church cannot continue without faithful and courageous lay people like this who are willing to stand up for confessional pastors who are speaking the truth. And this is the glory of Priscilla and Aquila, and this is why they will wear the crown of gold, or they are wearing the crown of gold even now in heaven, because of their courageous, wonderful support, teaching for the Apostle Paul, and then for the ministry, which continues today.
Dr. Peter Scher is an assistant professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Peter, thanks for being our guest.
Have a great weekend, Todd.
When we come back from this break, Dr. David Adams is going to join us. We're going to talk about the consequences of Darwin's ideas. They go far beyond the classroom, far beyond the lab, far beyond the biology tests and experiments and teachings. It's far-reaching, it's global, it's worldwide, and it's a tragic story indeed. The consequences of Darwin's ideas with Dr. David Adams after this.
Grace, faith, Scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Valentine's Day. It supposedly evolved?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the book on death and suffering entitled Why Would a Loving God?
Now imagine my surprise when I opened my daily newspaper on Valentine's Day to find a front page article entitled, "Your Animal Flirting is Not Just Human Behavior." This Valentine's Day article was telling readers that men chasing women was all a part of our so-called animal instincts in the evolution of life. From an evolutionary perspective, it's best if men actually have relationships with more than one woman, says the article. This helps spread the genes, enabling the survival of the fittest. You know, a popular TV program once featured a scientist justifying men being unfaithful to their wives on the basis of evolution. Other articles have justified actions like drug use, homosexual behavior, and murder on the basis of our animal ancestry, that our perverse behavior is all just genetic. You know, when people believe this, they'll think they can do anything. They won't acknowledge sin and that man's in rebellion against God. Let's remember that God created man from dust, a woman from his side, and they were one flesh. Thus, it's one man for one woman for life.
This week, people are not only celebrating Valentine's Day, but Charles Darwin's 200th birthday. You need to be ready with answers to counter his beliefs. Today's the last day we're offering a sample of our Answers magazine, almost entirely devoted to Darwin. For some great reading, present a donation of any size when you call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS. 888-89-ANSWERS.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. Visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastors or lay leaders to hold a seminar in your area. Go to theclcc.org.